Okay, we have the zchus to learn the second aliyah of a very difficult parsha, of Parsha's Korach, the definition of difficulty, Machlokes, the theme of the parsha, and a lot of the intensity can be found in this brief second aliyah. The second aliyah is very significant, both in terms of the drama of this whole interaction between Korach and his camp and Moshe, and there are halachic ramifications which are derived from this aliyah, maybe very significant halachic ramifications, and they're all beneath the surface. They're not explicit, and you have to delve in a little bit in order to find them. I don't know if you had a chance to look at that state reference in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim that they sent out. It's also not going to necessarily be obvious. You have to work a little bit to see how it connects. So let's get into that. So to begin with, the pasuk starts off, the aliyah starts off, pasuk yidalid, in the middle of a line, in the middle of an interaction. That here Moshe is aggrieved by the rebellion of Korach and his confederates, Dathan and Abiram, and he sends a messenger to them. So just to know the context, this is in the previous aliyah, in the end of Rishon, we're told that Vayishlach Moshe Likra L'Dasan V'Aviram B'nei Aliyah, V'yomru L'Nalu, said they're not going to come. And it's very interesting the way the Aliyah is broken up, because half of the response is in Rishon, and then the other half is here. So the beginning of their response, the end of the last Aliyah, they say, it's not bad enough that you took us out of Egypt to die here in the desert, and you also want to rule over us. What's going on with that? And now our Aliyah begins, Af lo el eretz lavas chalav v'dvash evi osonu, v'titein lanu na'achal osadu v'charem, ha'inei ha'anashim mahein t'naker lo na'le. So you took us out, that was the previous Aliyah, and you brought us in? No, you haven't brought us in. So we're still in nowhere land, we're still in the Midbar, and we're very unhappy with your leadership. And the Rishonim and the Farshim have many different takes on how exactly the contrast is set up here. What was the bigger taina? What was the smaller taina? What exactly is the flow? The emphasis on being taken out of Egypt, the emphasis on not being brought into any promised land yet, the fact that now, after last week's parsha, looks like we're in big trouble as far as that's concerned, after the Meraglim. So there's a lot of grievance being aired here. And in the context of all that, they say, we're not going to go up. It's a restatement of their position from the previous aliyah. Lo nala, we're not going. But don't miss the point. We are emphasizing how we are not going. And we're not going even if these people get their eyes poked out. So what exactly are they saying? And what's the significance of this? There's a lot. So, first of all, what are they saying? It sounds like they're saying, the literal translation, that there's just no chance that we're going, and do to us whatever you think you're going to do, we're not coming. Some have different interpretations. Rishon Shmuel Hirsch, in his commentary here, he sees it just as a reference to what they're saying here about the unfulfilled promises. So they're basically saying, what, do you think that we're blind? You think that we don't see that you haven't done what you're promising us to do, that you're going to do? You talk about all of these future hopes and talk about all of these dinim that are going to apply when we get into this promised land, and look where we are. You think we don't see that? You think that we're blind? So that's how Rav Hirsch understands it. There are some other more creative interpretations of Nassim Gestetner and his Sefer Lahoris Nassim, that he suggests that this is related to what we saw last week a little bit, so a little parallel synergy, that the Zohar had told us that one of the issues that the Meraglim had was that they were afraid of losing their leadership, that if they would go into the new land, they wouldn't be leaders anymore. And in a similar spirit, here they were saying that they don't want to trust Moshe because they are going to lose their influence. The Einei Ha'eda is not a reference to physical eyes, it's a reference to the leadership, and that maybe we're going to get knocked out, and that's what we're resisting. And the Sefer Yad Binyamin, the Sefer that was recently published from one of the sons of Rebbe Yashiv, Binyamin El Yashiv, he has a more creative suggestion that maybe it's talking about the people who came to brought the message, came to bring the message, the messengers who are going to play a major role in interpreting this pasuk, as we'll see. But that the messengers, the Gemara Maseches Ksubos, the end of Ksubos, and Daf Kufir Aleph, says that extensive missions are hard on the eyes. So what their Rosh Hashanah basically is saying is that you can have these people come to us a million times, they're really going to wear out their eyesight, and still, not going to make a difference. They're never going to convince us, we're not going to come. So there are a lot of different interpretations of what exactly the message here is, but there's one thing that is clear, is that it's chutzpahdik. Any way you look at it, they're definitely trying to make a point of anger and arrogance and defiance against Moshe Rabbeinu, and that seems to be the message of their response. So in order to fully appreciate this, so we have to take a step back for a minute and talk about one of the major themes of the Parsha as a whole. So the Parsha as a whole is about, or the Parsha at the beginning, is about the theme of Machlokes, a very crucial idea to appreciate and to understand in Halacha and Hashkafa. And the characters here, Korach, Zos, and Aviram, so they are people who are perceived as the instigators and the perpetuators of Machlokes, what we call Bali Machlokes. So there is a discussion to be had about the status of Bali Machlokes in Halacha. There is a statement in the Talmud Yerushalmi. If you want to learn Hilchos Lashon Hara from the Gemaras, so there are a lot of Gemaras about Lashon Hara. The Chafetz Chaim did not invent Hilchos Lashon Hara. There's a lot of Gemaras about it, but we don't have a Masechet Lashon Hara, so we have Gemaras that are scattered throughout Shas, and there are a few concentrations. So in the Talmud Bavli, in the middle of Masechet Erchin, you have a concentration of a lot of Gemaras about Lashon Hara, and in the Talmud Yerushalmi, in the beginning of Masechet Peah, there happened to be a lot of Dinim that refer to Lashon Hara. And one of them that appears in the Talmud Yerushalmi and Tei, they quote from Shmuel ben Nachmani, who says in the name of Rabbi Yonatan that it's Mutter Ledaver Lashon Hara al Bali Machlokes. So we have to figure out exactly what that means and if that's the case. So is this accepted by Halacha? So you do find this in some of the codes, and you find this in the Smag, you find this in the Smak. The Hagos Maimini quotes this, the Shai Tshuva quotes this, the Magen Avraham quotes this, and the Chafetz Chaim talks about it as well, but with qualifications, as we'll explain in a moment. And Gilyan HaShas in the Yerushalmi, so he emphasizes that this idea of a heter for Lashon Hara about Bali Machlokes is not a blanket heter. It doesn't just mean you can say whatever you want about Bali Machlokes, but it means specifically the hashkit as ha machlokes, that in your effort to try to settle the machlokes, to try to stop the machlokes, so it's mutter to speak Lashon Hara about these people, which make it sound like it is basically a toelas-based idea, that this is not a din in the gavra, so to speak. It's not that you're simply allowed to speak about these people, but it's that in the context of their pushing machlokes, so it is permissible to address that in a way that would otherwise be Lashon Hara. And the Chafetz Chaim in his sefer, he talks about this, if you had a chance to see it, the Chafetz Lashon Hara Chaz Chaz. So he notes that even if there is a position of Heter here, you still have to be very, very careful. This is not open season of the Bali Machlokes. You have to make sure that you really know what you're talking about and that you have to have pure kavanos. And that this is the only way that you can bring about the resolution or the cessation of the machlokas. So it's interesting because, again, this kind of emphasizes that he sees this as a idea of koela, that basically because this is going to accomplish an important goal, that's why you are allowed to say this. He doesn't see this as it did in the Gavra, to say that Bali machlokas are excluded from the protection of Hilchos Lashon Hara, that does not seem to be the position that he's taking. Now, there were others who said, maybe you should take that position. The Nitziv, for example, in his commentary to the Shilchos, so he understood that This is simply that they are outside the protection of Halachos Lashon Hara because they are Avayadim, because they are sinners. And this is a terrible Avera, which is possibly derived from Parshas Korach. It's a whole separate discussion that later on the Parsha tells us not that we will not be like Korach, and sounds like from the Gemara in Sanhedrin that that's an Isser. Whether that's counted as an Isser or Nebuah is a whole discussion, but at least one presentation of the Gemara is as a prohibition. To be Machzik B'Machlokes, that's what it means, not to be like Korach. So there's some who understand that that's the situation, that we're talking here about sinful people who are Bali Machlokes, so there's a exclusion from the protection of Halachos Lashon Hara for that reason. So it's interesting to note that doesn't seem to be the way the Chafetz Chaim is looking at it, and the way some others are looking at it. So there's a lot to explore about that. One aspect which is very powerful to think about is that the Isser of causing Machlokes is a unique kind of Avera in some ways, because on the one hand it is an Avera, on the other hand it's an Avera that's very often the case that the one doing it may not fully appreciate that they are doing it. And therefore, to label them as sinful in the same way as another kind of a bal avera, it's not necessarily going to fit. And the whole idea of characterizing the Isser Machlokes possibly different from many other averas in the Torah, that we often find that there's a balance that needs to be struck. So we're talking here about Lashon Hara, for example, and the question of Lashon Hara with Tolelas. So there's always a very difficult balance we have to figure out between when it's prohibited because of Lashon Hara and when it's obligatory because there is Tolelos involved. So when you talk about the Isser Machlokes, it's a very subtle balance because the Talmud is filled with Machlokes, as we know, and we don't shy away from that. And we, on one level, we enjoy that, the Melchamt Shel Torah. And Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos that there are two types. That there's a machlokes l'shem shemayim and a machlokes shelo l'shem shemayim. And a machlokes l'shem shemayim, that's like that of Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. And the machlokes, that's a bad machlokes, a machlokes shelo l'shem shemayim. The machlokes of Korach Adasso. There's a lot to say about that, but just what we'll borrow for now is that we see that the key to whether it's us or not has to do with a machlokes l'shem shemayim component. And that can be very, very hard to assess. That can be very hard to really clarify, coming from one's own bias, to know are they really pushing a machlokes for the right reasons or not. So it's an isser, yes, but it's an isser that's very easy for the one doing it to miss, to come to the conclusion that he is acting l'shem shemayim, and bias can do a tremendous amount to confuse one's motives. And therefore, maybe it has this unusual status that yes, it's an avera, but the person is not seen as a bal avera. The Chassam Sofer, in his commentary to Masechet Moed Katan, he has a very interesting interpretation where he adds a word and he really kind of redefines the whole idea that he adds the word mutl adaber loshen hara al bali machlokes. He adds bal machlokes shalal. That essentially he understands that what we're talking about is not a person who is querulous by nature. It's not a person who necessarily is a troublemaker. That may be a good way to translate Bali Machlokes in general as troublemakers. So that's not what we mean, maybe, in the Sofer's interpretation. But you mean somebody who you have an issue with and somebody who is locked in Machlokes with you. And then it sounds like what he means, a whole different interpretation, is that you're allowed to say at once, basically, you're allowed to inform people of the reality that this individual is your Bal Machlokes, is somebody who you have a history with or a tension with, and therefore everything could be understood in that context. That sometimes the person treats you a certain way, it could look very bad for you, unless there is an understanding that there is some kind of a context. So to inform others that there is a Machlokes between you and this person, so that could be important to convey, and that's how the Chassam Sofer understands it. Okay, so that all sounds like it is basic background to the Parsha. So why are we emphasizing it here specifically in the context of this Pasuk? So there is additional relevance to this Pasuk specifically. And the Gemara in the Sakh Maitkatan derives the din from this pasuk. Gemara on Daf Tazayin of Aleph. Gemara tells us that it's mutter for a shliach bezdin. When you have a messenger of bezdin who's off representing them and trying to send a summons, trying to serve a subpoena, trying to bring a message of invitation to the bezdin, so they are allowed to report back to the bezdin whatever the individual does to them. So if the person they're supposed to summon is disrespectful to them and curses them out, like you see from this response, so it's not a problem of Lashon Hara for them to go back and report that to the Beis Din. That's the lesson that you apparently get from here, that it seems like the Shliach must have come back and told Moshe this, and apparently that's okay. Apparently they are allowed to do that. So that's how Rashi over there seems to explain it, that it seems like it was related back to Moshe, and therefore, apparently, that's what it's to do. That's not Lashon Hara for the Shliach Bezdin to report it back. But for Tari Tanima over here, comments that it's not necessarily so obvious that they told him. Well, we know that there are many things in the Torah that Moshe records, and Moshe wasn't necessarily present to witness them. So it could be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, like he told Moshe other things that are in the Torah that Moshe wasn't there for. How do we know for sure that the Shliach Bezdin necessarily reported it himself? So Taras Mimis suggests that we find indications that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was also careful about Lashon Hara, that he also doesn't needlessly relate things that are derogatory. That's how the Gemara tells us the whole discussion in Sefer Yehoshua. There's the whole story with Achan, how he gets revealed as the one who was the guilty party, and they have to go through a lottery in order to find it out. And Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't reveal it directly because he's not a dilator. He's not somebody who engages in Lashon Hara. So Chof Chaim T. Tartina suggests here that maybe that's also the context, that even God wouldn't have told Moshe this if there wasn't a justification for it. So we see that Moshe found out, presumably from the Shliach, because the Shliach was allowed to tell him. And this din is brought in the Ramah. This is part of Hilchos Layonim in the beginning of Choshen Mishpat in Siman Beis. The Ramah quotes this. And the Sma comments over here that even if you were to think that the Shliach maybe was wrong. Okay, so the Shliach told him, but the Shliach maybe he shouldn't have told him. Maybe that was an Isser of Lashon Hara. He says that it wouldn't have been recorded in the Torah this way. So the fact that Moshe recorded it in the Torah, so that is to indicate that that's what happens. They put all these pieces together, that the Shliach must have reported it, like the Tzimo was discussing, and that Moshe knew about it, and Moshe approved, and it got recorded in the Torah, so apparently it is mutter. So you take these dinim together, so there are many who raise the question, well, how do you know you can derive anything from here? The Chachma Shlomo, many others raise this question, that how do you know that there's a source here to tell you that the Shliach Bezdin can report back to the Bezdin? Maybe it's because we're talking about Dasan and Aviram. They're the paradigmatic Bali Macholkes. So if it's Mutter with Abba Lashon Hara, Bali Macholkes, so then maybe that was the reason for the Hetzer. But it's not some general idea that a Shliach Bezdin is allowed to report back always. So there are some who say, well, this is really the source for it. That's what we're, it's all one idea, that this is the behavior of the Bali Macholkes, and it impacts the din, and in order to be able to settle the issue, you're allowed to report it back, and that's all part of one idea. It's not necessarily a separate idea. So that's one approach. Sam writes in a sefer called the Adiosis, the Masechet Megillah, where he suggests that if you assume the Tel-Alice-based approach, that the whole heter is to quiet down the machlokas. So this is going to inflame things more, it would seem. This is basically rechilas, to come back and say this is what that guy said about you. That's normally what we understand as the prohibition of rechilas, which is based on the idea that it inflames people, that it's going to make machlokas worse. So therefore, it's not necessarily something that would have been included in the heter of Bali Machlokas. There was also an article in the journal Tluna many years ago by Rav Dvoritz, who wrote that the purpose is just to identify the individual as a Bal Machlokes. If it's not clear, the person is a troublemaker. So then you're allowed to speak about them. But here you have Das and Aviram again. They are the poster boys for Machlokes. So there's no extra need to identify who we're talking about here. So it wouldn't have been with Toelas to say this if it were not otherwise true. Das and Gestetner in the Sefer of Harus Nachman Al HaTorah. So he put the spin on it that if Moshe, his whole point here is he was trying to make peace, and we see many indications that he was trying to calm things down, so therefore he would not have worked off the premise that they are Bali Machlokes, because he's trying to win them over, he's trying to smooth things. So he would not have come from that perspective, and that would not necessarily have been a relevant factor here. So there are many, many discussions in the Svarim all surrounding this idea of Lashon Hara about Bala Machlokas and the implications of Dustin and Aviram's response, and how those two ideas come together. Do they overlap? Do they not overlap? Are they talking about separate points? This is a major discussion. There's also a very significant issue, a very, very significant issue in Hilchos Lashon Hara, which may also be affected by this pasuk and by the Gemara about the Shliach Bezdin, that there is a major discussion which has a lot of practical implications throughout history, maybe now even more, the way institutions are set up, that let's say, for example, let's say you have a school. So the principal needs to communicate to the parents of the student that the student did something wrong, or that the student needs to be corrected in some way. So presumably that's not Lashon Hara, that's the Toelas. That's necessary in order to get the information to the parent that is important for them to correct their child's behavior or improve their learning. But what about the fact that the principal doesn't just say this directly to the parent, but he may have an assistant or a secretary who's going to type up the letter? So is he allowed to do that? Is he allowed to involve a third party in this process? Who wouldn't necessarily have known there was anything wrong with the student? Is the principal, whoever it is, the Rashiva, is he allowed to involve a secretary, any kind of third party, in making this communication? Or what about other areas where there's privacy considerations, where there are other kinds of issues? Can you get people involved for the sake of your efficiency? So this is a big machlokas. Tzitz Eliezer has a tshuva about this in the context of a hospital and privacy-related concerns. And there he is makil for a number of reasons. He says, well, part of the Toelas to allow the system to run more efficiently, and that people understand when they get involved in the system, they understand that's how it works, that there are functionaries who are involved, who are necessary for the productivity and the flow of what's happening, and that it's all kiyarach, it's all one hand, basically. The principal and those, or the head of the hospital, or the doctor, whoever he works with, that's all understood, and there isn't any concern. Others were not so sure. So Rabbi Yashiv is quoted by Yitzchak Wolberstein as being more machmir about this, and he was talking in the context of also doctors training other doctors and evaluating them and writing up the reports. So he didn't allow the reports to be written up by any kind of assistant. A training doctor had to write the reports himself. And then he was asked, well, what if they just left out the names and wrote everything else, and then the doctor fills in the names at the last minute? But the one who was asked to write it up wouldn't necessarily know the names, and he didn't like that either. He said that maybe they'll figure it out. So he was very machmer on that, a different approach than the Tzitz Eliezer. So Huttner has in one of his letters, Yitzchak Huttner, in one of the letters in the Pachet Yitzchak, so he quotes this Gemara based on this pasuk, this idea of Hainei Anashim Haim Tanakher, that the notion of the heter for a Shliach Bezdin to reveal what is happening, that the Gemara derives from this pasuk. So the footner understands it's not just about Shliach Bezdin and about this particular kind of example of Bala Machlokes, it's not about that at all. The way he understands it is just a way of saying that when you have an institution, and the institution needs people working for it in order to function. So that's not Lashon Hara. That's all a part of the Toelas. That's the normal functioning of an institution that has people carrying out tests on its behalf. that's legitimate, and that's not a violation of Lashon Hara, and that the Gemara figures that out from this interaction. So this back and forth, we're able to see that that's the case. Okay, that's all from that first pasuk. So a few minutes to the other pasuk. So the next pasuk goes on to say, "V'yichal Moshe Mo'od." V'yomer Hashem al tefen al melchasam lo chomer echad mehem nosasi lo hariosi es echad mehem. So Moshe gets very upset. There's a lot in this pasuk as well. So Moshe is very, very upset about this. V'yichal Moshe Mo'od. Very upset. So it's interesting to note that the Tziv has a comment over here that we see that, first of all, this is a kind of a focused type of upsetness. And so before we talk about what exactly we're describing here, it doesn't have a lashon of charon af. It's not just a reactive anger. But it's also interesting that, as the Tziv discusses, that this seems to be a very different reaction to what happened with Aaron and Miriam in the end of Balosta, where they disparage him, and we don't find that he gets upset about that, and here he's getting upset. So that if they're right, that there, that was personal, okay, so he could be mochel on that, but this goes to the leadership of the nation. This is something that's going to affect the functionality of Klal Yisrael and its leadership, so that's a much bigger deal, so this is something that really does upset him. I think it's also relevant to point out that it's also very, very different from Moshe as far as what happened to him with Miriam and Aaron, and over here, because it's really coming from an opposite place. Setting aside the fact that Moshe was beloved to Miriam and Aaron, and they were certainly trying to help, and the question of motive is already very different, so it's also going to evoke a different reaction. But also the whole point was essentially the opposite point, that Miriam and Aaron were saying that, okay, so Moshe is a Navi, Moshe is a leader, but it doesn't mean that he has to separate himself from his wife, it doesn't mean that he has to take on extra burden, so to speak. While here they're saying the opposite, that they're basically attacking him of not really being a sincere leader and of having ulterior motives, and that the first goes into the whole background about how here, you know, you're not taking us to the promised land, and you're saying it's all our fault, you're just covering up your mistakes, you're blaming it on the Meraglim. You have all kinds of major ulterior motives and failures as a leader, so it's really going in the opposite direction. It's far, yes, it's more insulting, but also it undermines the crucial role that he's playing in a very different way. So you can understand that he has a very different reaction, and that this is something which kind of runs through a lot of what we see in his response. So first he says, Al-Tefin al-Mukhasam, so you should not turn to their gift, you should not turn to their tefillah, to their offering. So that's how the Ramban understands that when it says al-Mukhasam, their offering, but he says you shouldn't turn your attention to their korbanos or their tefillos. That it's all a way of trying to pray against me, against Moshe. So don't, God, you shouldn't pay attention to that. I'll tape in. So first of all, as many point out, the has a whole discussion about this. You see the power of tefillah, that apparently even the Rishayim, with the power of tefillah, they could overcome Nevuah. That seems to be the fear that Moshe had to address. It's also that Moshe was himself now offering a tefillah to kind of counteract the tefillah, but it says something very noteworthy about the potential power of tefillah, that Vital Rudinsky in his Sichos, for instance, say for Mishkan Vital, he notes how, you see, there is a power of tefillah that even small people can accomplish a lot when the tefillah is intense. And Gemara in Makos and Daffir Aleph says that the mothers of the Kohanim would give out cake to the people who were in the Eir Miklat, the people who were waiting for the Kohen Gadol to die. So the Kohen Gadol's mother would try to win them over with cooking, with baking, with pastry, in order that they shouldn't daven that their son should die. And it seems to be telling us that, you see, there is a tremendous power there, that you see that there is a strong will that can affect a lot, and if you can weaken that will, that's what these mothers were doing, so that may take away from the power of the tefila. And the continuation of the pasuk where he says, "Lo chamer echad mehem no sasi," I didn't take even a donkey from them, which we'll say a little bit more about in a minute, but that is, Lubinsky suggests it's a part of his point about the tefila, that you think that there is something behind the tefila. I want to emphasize that there isn't, that there's no justification for the tefila, all was combined to the impact. So I want to emphasize that the tefila is not something that is worthy of any attention. The mincha itself, as far as the karbanos, the Baal Tzurati and his sichos points out that this is to say that even the karban, that's the karban of the tzibur, so they have a chelek in, the chazal have a language like that. Midrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, Yodei ani sheyesh lahem chelek, it's midei tzibur. I know that they have a chelek, but you shouldn't pay any attention to it. Well, Baal Tzurati understood that it's a carbon seaboard, so there's no individual identity in it. But Moshe, as a leader, so he does know about the individual's portion, and he's saying, don't pay attention to the gaver at all. Don't pay attention to the ones bringing it. They have no merit to them. And Hirsch also expands on the fact that here, Dustin and Aviram, they're saying the whole thing is a sham. They're saying that Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership is all phony. So therefore, they don't believe in anything. The whole system that is set up doesn't have any meaning to it as far as they were relating to it. They're undermining the whole foundation. So therefore, you shouldn't pay attention. You shouldn't give it any kind of credit at all. This idea, when he says, I didn't take even a donkey from them, so it's interesting just to try to understand what exactly is the message of that. He's so proud that he didn't steal from them. That's so unusual. It's good, but that's something that he has to brag about. You would think that that's basic, that you're not going to take even a donkey. So first of all, it's interesting to note that Gemara Megillah tells us that in the Septuagint, when you had the translation into Greek of the Torah by the 70 Chachamim, so the Gemara says that they all figured out as one that there are certain psukim that they're going to have to translate a little differently, because they could get the wrong impression. And here was one of the places that they were a little bit concerned, that they thought he was, if he was saying, I didn't take one donkey, maybe, but other things I did take. Maybe that would be the impression that they would get, and that could start, as we see too often, and that would start a whole libel against the Jews and their leadership. So therefore, he had to be very clear. I mean this overall, he didn't take any lochemet, didn't take anything at all. He shouldn't derive any kind of an implication that there were other things that were taken. The Gemara in Maseches Nedarim has an extra element here in Daf Lamechet. They didn't take even if you paid for it. You didn't, it's not just you didn't steal stuff from the people, but even to pressure them to sell it, to pay for it, he wouldn't take it. And that apparently he didn't want to be matriach on them. And that's why the Rush has the Gersa, the Rush of the Nedarim has the Gersa. That adds the word anav, that he was a soft-spoken person, and he didn't want to try to impose on other people, even if he was paying them. The Hirsch, once again, comments a little bit in the opposite direction, that this language of nasasi could also be related to a language of masa as a payment. So basically he was saying that I adjudicated over them, and I didn't take anything from them in return. And I led them and I didn't take anything from them as a salary. So they shouldn't have any reason to have a tine on me for that. And again, it all goes into the same theme that he was being accused, basically, of having ulterior motives and of ruling for his own purpose and for his own benefit. So this emphasis that, no, I didn't make anything out of this. I'm not getting paid. I'm not taking taxes from them, and the idea that they should be attacking my merit and my motives is particularly offensive and should not be credited at all, should not be merited at all. The Medrash has another element to this that I didn't take, meaning I didn't take to give to somebody else, meaning let's say there was a litigation, there was a din Torah, so he didn't take. He was a mezakeh sechayev, mechayev a mezakeh. He didn't take from the one who owes, who doesn't owe, and say he does owe, and vice versa. He didn't pervert justice. So So once again, the question could be raised. Okay, so he's so proud he didn't steal. He's so proud that he didn't switch around the din. These are kind of basic things. This is not necessarily something that he has to brag about. So you could say that all of this, okay, but he does have, seem to have to emphasize that he's doing everything kasher v'yasher because he's being accused of having ulterior motives and of running a whole sham. So maybe it's not so out of line that he should also have to emphasize even basic misdeeds he didn't do. But it could be more to it as well. You could also say that not only did he not intentionally take anything inappropriately, but in this very tiring role of the adjudicator for Klal Yisrael, as we know how much of an effort that took from him, the whole story with Yisrael, we know how much he put towards trying to bring justice to the people. He wasn't sloppy in this. He didn't let things happen that even inadvertently would result in somebody having to pay something he doesn't really owe, or vice versa. So again, he's emphasizing that I'm not trying to steal from anybody here, and I'm not getting paid even on a basic level. And not only that, but I do everything so carefully. I put in all the effort. I don't even let anything happen through negligence, through any lack of attention. And this is without merit at all. And it's a crucial point to emphasize because the whole message here, which can be so subtle, you know, the whole message here that, oh, the leadership, they have ulterior motives, you can't trust anything. And here he's saying, look how the model is of a completely dedicated leader who is acting with Shem Shamayim and taking all the necessary steps to make sure that there isn't any mistake in din, even inadvertently. This is something which should be appreciated and has to be asserted in the face of this kind of an attack. And the extra element that's also noted by this Sefer Yabin Yom, the Russians, suggests also that the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us that when the litigants, you have to be very open-minded, and when the litigants come before you, so then you should see each of them as a Rasha, meaning you shouldn't assume that one guy is a tzaddik and he's probably right, but you should have the openness to the idea that either one of them could be in the wrong, and then after the makabel is in, then you should see both of them as innocent. So when they're before you beforehand, you should see both of them guilty, and afterwards you should see both of them as zakai, as innocent. So he discusses there the Yabin Yom and how Moshe Rabbeinu was on a whole different level. He didn't need the whole process of Eidim and everything else that a normal Dayan would need because he had his elevated kochos. He could tell who was guilty and who was innocent right away. But nonetheless, he still maintained this extra level of care and that he had his open mind, like we were suggesting before, and that he saw them in line with this Mishnah, that before it was settled, they're both chayiv, and afterwards they're both zakai, all of that he stuck to, and he didn't take anything inappropriate, and all of this is to emphasize, not only on a personal level, how unjustified their whole attack was, but also the basic necessity of appreciating, for the sake of Klal Yisrael, what the Amuna in the leadership system is going to require and what's necessary for our whole system to endure. So I'll just mention one more idea. So this next pasuk is also quoted by the Gemara in Moed Katan to tell us some more dinim about the whole process of din. This is a Yomer Moshe Karach Atal Chodosecha Hayu Ufnei Hashem Atal Vehem V'Aron Mochar. So all of this, the Gemara derives different dinim from here regarding the whole process of Bezdin, that you have to summon somebody, that you have to have a process of Hazmana, and the Torah Tanima notes based on this and other Gemaras, that even if you think you know the whole story, you still have to summon the people to Din, and it's also not the litigant who summons his other litigant to Din, but it's the Bezdin that has to summon them, and you have to tell them that they're going to come in front of Chashuv of Bezdin, with Nei Hashem, and you have to tell them who the other party is. You don't just summon somebody without knowing what's going on. You tell them who the other party is. That's how they behave the Aram. You also emphasize who they're coming up against. And Machar, you also give them a set time. So all of these details, the Gemara and Mordechai derives, but it also all goes to the overall picture that we have a system of justice that is objective and fair, and that that is crucial to how we function, and that we are trying to correct for all kinds of biases and other aspects of human nature that could cause the din to come out in an unfair way. And the model of Moshe is constantly being contrasted with the model of Korach. So Korach is coming from a perspective of Machlokes, that Shelo L'Shem Shemayim, that is not fair to the other party who is dealing with, is not working off of any principles of justice or proper approach. And Moshe Rabbeinu is constantly going in the opposite direction. And this is an important idea to appreciate the whole theme of the Parsha, that if we're told that we're not allowed to be like Korach, which is a prohibition to be a Baal Machlokes like Korach, and if there is such a thing as a Machlokes Shelo L'Shem Shemayim, a Machlokes L'Shem Shemayim, and the whole message of not being like Korach, which Rav Nachman Goldberg, which Dr. Baruch has an article about, emphasizing that the inverse is also part of the mitzvah here, and that if we shouldn't be like Korach, we should be like Moshe. It's the opposite of a Baal Machlokes. And we see that doesn't mean that he refrains from speaking his mind or disagreeing when he needs to or standing up for the Torah. All of that is a necessity and all of that is crucial, but that the way in which it's done and the motivation in which it's done and the entire process all goes to the definition of what is considered to be a bad machlokas and what's considered to be a good machlokas. And it's among the very, very crucial lesson of this parsha. So there's a lot to think about, a lot to give particular focus to as we hear this story laying this Shabbos and as we go over the parsha. And it should be our bracha that we should be saved of machlokas, that we should only have machlokas l'shem shemayim, that we should be able to hold on to the midah of shalom. And of course, today is Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, which if nothing changes in the next 2 weeks, is the month in which the 3 weeks is set to happen, the period in which we feel the consequences of last week's parsha most intensely. And we know that the ability to achieve a state of shalom and a state of avoidance of all machlok and shalom l'shem shemayim is crucial. So understanding this parsha in depth and in detail is very important to us. Like Rashi says in the beginning, he talks about the Medrash where this Parsha is Yofer Medrashas, but in any event, to study the Parsha carefully and to try to really understand what are the themes of this interaction, where is the subtlety between the Machlokes L'Shem Shemayim and the Machlokes Shelo L'Shem Shemayim, and the difficulty sometimes in judging where that line is crossed, and all of the internal biases that can confuse the matter is a very crucial avoda for us, and we should pay very careful attention to this parsha in the hopes that we are able to bring ourselves further towards the goal of shalom, both for ourselves and for Klal Yisrael in the world. And with that, I will wish you, to also reiterate the synergy what we talked about yesterday, I will wish you a Shabbat Shalom. Have a wonderful Shabbos, and happy birthday, Tari.
Thank you.